Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of the League of Mediocre Gentlemen. I'm your host, Richard Martindale, and with me, as always, for anything on the anime front, is my co-host, Ian Shaw.
Because anime is trash, and so are we.
Oh, man, yes. So, Ian, both screenings of Rascal Does Not Dream of a Dreaming Girl have been aired in the United States. It was a limited release on October 2nd and October 3rd. So today we are going to divulge into it and begin, you know, giving our opinions.
Yep. Are you excited? I am very excited, actually, because I think we both have a lot of opinions.
Oh, yeah. So, little background just before we dive in, because we never did a full Rascal episode. We did, I mean, we might as well have on that fall.
We talked a lot about it.
Yeah, it was so much that we talked about it, but, like, we never really went into one. So, for those who skipped fall 2018, this is a movie that is a sequel to that show, which is the show called Rascal Does Not Dream of Bunny Girl Senpai. This is Rascal Does Not Dream of a Dreaming Girl, so they are similar titles, but slightly different. This is the adapted 6th and 7th light novels of the series, out of the 9 light novels that are currently out. So we are closing in on the end. Everyone from the show returned for this, all the cast, the directors, the sound, the music composer, everything. So no one got left off, so if when you watch this, you'll feel pretty much like you're picking right off from the show.
Yeah, and like stylistically, like it was almost identical. Like it almost felt like an extended episode of the show.
Yeah, basically. It only aired in select theaters in the U.S. I had to drive all the way up to Fairfax with mine.
I only had to go 10 minutes up the road, Richard.
Man, Wisconsin sounds great.
Well, no, Madison is great. Like the rest of Wisconsin, beside it's Milwaukee, Madison, and then just like cows.
Cows are nice.
I mean, yes, they're friendly, but they can't, you know, they have no interest in anime. So I'm pretty sure Milwaukee and Madison were the only places that had screenings.
Fair point. So, but initial thoughts and impressions, Ian, what did you, like, overview of, without going into spoiler territory, because we'll right. eventually get to that spoiler warning. But just initial thoughts of the movie-going experience, because, I mean, I think both of us are fairly amateurish when it comes to seeing anime movies in theaters.
Yeah, aside from aside from the Pokemon movie back when I was a kid, this is the first anime film that I've actually seen in theaters. And like the Pokemon movie doesn't really count because that got a wide release when we were kids, and it was a big thing in America. So this is this sort of thing where it's like an event. Like, this is the first time that I've ever gone to something like that. I didn't go to Dragon Ball Super Broly, because I hadn't
I've heard
been
both ways.
Yeah, I haven't been keeping up with that series, so I wasn't particularly interested. And I didn't see the My Hero Academia movie, because at that point I hadn't watched all of My Hero Academia. So, but now I was like, hey, Bunny Girl Senpai, I like that show, so I would say that based on what you've told me about your theater experience, mine was a lot better.
Yeah,
I went to a theater that I actually never been to before, but
cool.
It was, it's kind of a big theater chain here in Wisconsin. It's called Marcus Theaters for anybody who is a Wisconsin person that might be listening to this. And they have, it's a pretty standard theater nowadays because they have, you know, it's like they all nowadays have all of the Dream Lounger kind of seats, you know, the reclining seats and everything. But the theater I went to has a restaurant / bar inside. So I showed up early, got food, like a really good burger. I was surprised. I was pleasantly surprised.
How early did you show up for?
Well, I was originally going to go and play some games of X-Wing with some people, but they never showed. So I ended up getting to the movie theater probably almost an hour early, so I was like, well, I'll get food. And so I had a really good burger and a really good Long Island in the restaurant bar thing, and they were showing Austin Powers Goldmember on they had this like projection screen on the side of the restaurant. They show, I guess, like classic movies and stuff, and I was like, oh, that's kind of fun. And then, so the food was really good and everything, and then I went in, I got myself some candy and went into the theater about 10 minutes before it started, and it was already really crowded. I knew it was basically a sold-out theater because I checked the seating chart before I got there, and I was pleasantly surprised to see that it was pretty much sold out. And the audience was pretty much... I was actually kind of wondering what the audience was going to be for this.
Same.
Because it is like a more dramatic anime, so it's not... I was like, you're probably not going to get as many as your traditional shonen fuckboys.
Yeah. So I was like, there'll be some. There's a Venn diagram middle in between them, yeah. For sure. But I was like,
what is this going to look like? And I was like, oh, I should have known. Like, it's mostly just like the true otaku, American otaku of the anime community, which is like a lot of neckbeards, a lot of people who haven't seen the sun in a while. Like 80% male, I would say.
Okay, that sounds about right for mine as well.
And I don't think that I saw a single female there that I would say wasn't like with a guy, like probably either their girlfriend or like really, really close otaku friends.
Their bodyguards.
Who friend zoned him or something. Yep. Like, Susan declined to see this film.
Well, she would have needed to see the show first.
Well, that's the thing. And I tried to be like, I told her that up front. I was like, look, like, you know, because I think she was like, maybe. And I was like, okay, like, here's the thing. I'm going to tell you this right now. Like, if you go to this, you have to watch the anime with me before, because you will not understand it at all if you don't. And yeah. I think she was like, no, it's fine. You go on your own. But they, unlike your theater, best part of mine, they didn't air any previews before the film. They just went right into it. Like, okay. Which I was like, wait, it's starting? Like, oh man, that's great. It's like, that's fantastic. They didn't air any previews ahead of it. It was like, you know, it was seamless, went right into it. Everyone was respectful in the theater. Like, there was no like awful like humans. Like, you know, sometimes where you always have that chance. Usually you only get those in the really like mainstream films. Yeah. Like sometimes when I see a Marvel movie, like I'll have people like that who are just terrible. But everyone was very respectful, and like they laughed when it was appropriate to laugh, and they gasped in that one moment where it was appropriate to gasp.
Yeah, we'll get to that one.
Yeah. So, but I would say overall it was a very positive movie going experience, and it made me very positive about where anime is, because this is not like something that is very commonly, I feel like, very commonly watched. Like, it's not a shonen thing. It's not My Hero Academia. It's not Dragon Ball. Like,
this is a very niche-y movie from a show that like is not about, like, I mean, it's like
there's
an anime.
There's no action in this show.
Yeah, there's supernatural stuff, but like it's so downplayed and subdued.
It's a drama.
Yeah, it's a lot better. It's not better, but it's very much different compared to what you're.
But it was
expect.
A full theater. Like, it was full.
Awesome.
Like, it was sold out. Like, all except for the very front row. And I was like, hey, that's cool. I was like, and I like to see that, because then, like, of course, that means that more of these movies will be shown in the U.S. going forward, which I think is great. So, yeah, let's go. What about you? What were your...
All right, so like you, I also showed up an hour early because I thought that I-66 traffic was going to be way worse than it was. Usually, you'll sit in traffic for like 40 minutes where I'm at, and during the time, the show's up at 7 p.m., and so about that time is when the whole traffic is just like gridlocked and blocked, and it doesn't matter if you're going with traffic or against it, you're going to have a hard time or a bad time.
I remember.
So, surprisingly, somehow, on a Wednesday, traffic was fine, and I got there an hour early. So... I got food. Unlike you, if I had done more research, I probably could have found a theater showing this that was more like yours. But,
so remind me, what theater chain did you go to?
I went to a Regal in, and I have no problem throwing them under the bus for this. It's Fairfax Town Center is where I went to.
Yeah, like Regal, to me, Regal is kind of like a subpar movie chain, but yeah. Like they're very, at least in my experience, I used to work for a Regal.
Regal is a very wannabe movie theater chain, where it feels like they're trying to kind of catch up constantly to other fads that other better chains have kind of started, and they're always like a day late to that thing. So like putting a bar to the theater, like they're maybe a little late to that sometimes, and another theater has already moved on to like a more cafe lounge experience. It's just, yeah, it's weird with Regal, but it just seems like they're always... desperate to try to like do what other theaters are doing and capitalize on that as fast as possible. But anyway, I got in there about an hour early, and got my food, found my seat. I was the first one in the theater because I was an hour early, And I thought, this is fine. I'm kind of hungry, and my popcorn's overflowing, so I'll eat it. When I first got tickets, there was not that many seats, like, had been purchased yet. So, coming in, I was not sure how many people would actually show up. By the end, it was pretty much a full theater, I think, by the end. It there just, people trickled in. Northern Virginia is a little bit more pretentious about their anime or about what they're showing. So I think people were sort of sneaking into the theater as they sort of like knew it was safe to go outside.
Once
with this
the
hobby.
Lights were down.
Yeah.
So like nobody can recognize me.
So similar ratio. I think the only, there was only a couple, I think actually I had less women in the theater, which is unfortunate because I feel like this is the kind of show and movie that I think actually would appeal to more women than men, you would expect, because of the themes and the way it's kind of plot-driven with the drama. But
maybe? I don't know. Because it does seem to be like, it's kind of like a fake-out harem anime.
Kind of, but like, and this is
when I say, I mean fake-out. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Because there's a lot of girls and there's not a lot of cute guys in it. There's only two. but it's, but anyway, so getting in there, everything was fine. I also actually didn't really have ads. The ads I had were those weird before, like as everyone's sitting down.
Like
those
the Regal, like first take or whatever the hell.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
And I can safely say that these are the ones that were like questionably geared toward this movie. Because it's very obvious that Regal still doesn't know, or any theater chain, still doesn't know what the hell to do with anime movies. Because, you know, the big release one was like Pokemon back in the day, and like obviously cartoon, obviously children, so let's advertise more first takes and children like cartoon shows. And they did the same thing for here, but your audience is definitely
100% adult.
Yeah, and if not an adult, probably about to be like 18 or something in that
like
range.
This,
young adult
this show, this show definitely appeals to people our age,
right.
Maybe older.
So, I got a bunch of cartoons in this first take that, like, and they weren't even, like, good popular cartoons. They're, like, really weird, also niche shows. So, like, they're trying to sort of be like, maybe they'll like this cartoon with the fox or something. Like, just throw it out there. And I'm like, what the hell am I watching here? Like, guys, do you still not know your audience?
It's like they took the first look that they probably air before that movie Abominable, about the DreamWorks one, about the Abominable Snowman.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
they
yeah.
They probably aired that, like, in front of this.
I would not have been surprised. So that was weird, but then the movie starts like it's supposed to, sort of. No sound in the beginning. And we're all weebs at this point where we know
so,
what the
like,
end of the
like, so wait a minute. So you're all weebs. So you're all staring at each other awkwardly for someone to go outside and actually talk to.
Oh, yeah.
About
so,
this problem.
Yeah, exactly so. So, because most of us are non-confrontational. But, like, we all know the sound of Aniplex's little logo Aniplex. When it comes off. And
yep.
Funimation. And very much we were like, is this just an effect? Is they just not showing us the sound? Something's wrong. One of these would have sound. And then it goes into the beginning of the movie, and there's still no sound. So, yes, most of us are weebs, don't want confrontation. But you also have the nerd rage people, who are very much angry at the drop of the hat.
They're proving useful for once.
And in comes our hero. I put hero into brackets because I would not have wanted to sit next to this guy after this. Who, within like 30 seconds to a minute of the show not working properly, gets up out of his seat, storms off into the hallway, and shouts for all of us to hear, "Hey! It's stolen out! It's stolen out!" And like, we're all sitting there quietly like, is this it? Is this our Colorado? Are we about to get killed here?
Oh,
God.
Jesus Christ.
And so, eventually he comes back after shouting a couple more times. And this is, like, not even neckbeard. This looks like a Sons of Anarchy, like, reject kind of a thing. Like, he looks like he rode it on a motorcycle. And he's just here to see his my senpai do her thing. That's all. This is his therapy session. So, gets back. Eventually, after 26 minutes, eventually the movie finally starts and kicks off correctly. After, like, multiple restarts, multiple, like, sound delays. At one point, we thought that they were going to just start it from where they left off. And they were like, oh, the sound's fixed, and we're just going to start it. But luckily, everything kind of worked out, and they finally, like, got it together.
My wife just walked in the room, and she's calling us nerds.
Ah, perfect.
That's fine.
One of us. Hey, she married the nerd.
She did marry the nerd. She's also a nerd in her own way. She just doesn't acknowledge it, because she's, like, a nerd for trashy reality TV and a nerd for, you know, pop music stars from when she was a kid. So
It's just nerd.
It's all a different kind of nerd.
Have you showed her Carol on Tuesday yet? I think she'd get a kick out of that.
No, I haven't yet. It's baby steps. So
that's unfortunate. We'll see.
What?
But I might. Well, I might when the full series comes out, which
December 24th. Yeah. What the hell?
Yeah, Netflix can go suck a good hand.
They're doing this they're doing it intentionally, because I've watched up until that point. Off topic, sorry guys, this is not about Rascal. So, but like, they're doing it intentionally because the second half is 100% in Christmas time. And they're doing this not because they have to, but because they want to.
Well, and also it's like a really good time to get like viewership too, because everyone's off from work and they're like at home, blah, blah, blah. And like,
Sure. We're always at home. We're
It's weak. Just so fucking... Know
your audience. We never
so
left.
It's so manipulative. Anyway, that's
anyway.
It. Funny girl.
Yeah, so anyway, movie starts. And so that's my initial reaction. Same thing. I think the fact that the sound and everything screwed up almost added to the fact that everyone was, like, dead quiet for this movie. Because I think most people were afraid that, like, something would go wrong again. And that if they were talking, the, like, one time we finally got to hear something, it would all, like, they would be the one to get to ruin it or whatever. So... in a weird way, it had a positive effect on the audience, but, like, eventually we kind of warmed up, and yes, we laughed where we were supposed to laugh. There was the gasp at that one scene. That I think most people could have guessed what was about to happen, but you still are just, like, kind of in disbelief. You're like, oh, they went there.
Not think that they would go there. That's why I was surprised.
I will get there in a second. But, I thought... this is actually my second anime theater experience. My first one was, besides Pokemon, my first one was the Fate Stay Night Heaven's Feel Presage Flower one. Very similar experience as well. And that one was actually in dub. So even I was actually really surprised because, one, Fate fans are kind of psychotic. at least online they are.
Have you seen episode 0 for the new one?
No, I have not. I didn't know there was a new one.
Yeah, there's another one. And it's like, I haven't watched all of it because I was falling asleep last night when I watched it. But it's on Crunchyroll. It's episode 0 for this new one that's in the future, but not really. And I guess people are trying to exploit the servants or something or combine them with you. I don't know. Let me rewatch it and get back to you.
It's not... Okay, I'm going to ask... a question that I'm scared for the answer. It's not Grand Order, is it?
Oh, yes.
God damn it! Okay, if there was ever a storyline that was worse than Fate Apocrypha, Fate Grand Order is the most garbage one of them all. Okay, if you've ever... a little rant here.
Let me pull up my Crunchyroll history and read the full title.
And this is why Fate fans are psychotic. If you've ever wanted the most disgustingly exploitive harem kind of a thing... it's Fate Grand Order, because
before you keep running it in. So
because anyone who could be a female is a female. Fucking Leonardo DiCaprio is a female. They don't even have female people from those eras that are notable female, like, figures.
Just hold your shit for 10 seconds, okay? The title is called Fate Grand Order Absolute Demonic Front : Babylonia.
God damn it.
And the summary for episode 0 is the year 2010 AD, Romani Archaman has been posted to Chaldea?
Yeah, there, Chaldea.
There he becomes the primary doctor for a young girl, Mash Kyrie Light. Chaldea's second successful summoning experiment is interested in the word senpai.
Yep.
The interaction between the two gives Mash a reason to hope. That hope becomes a wave and starts to spread. That is your story. The story of a normal somebody. The story at the beginning of a journey that weaves the future. I don't know who fucking wrote that, but they need to be fired.
I think they should be promoted, because that's the story. Mash is essentially a gray copycat again, And just, it's like, there's a fucking mobile game for this, and it's so trashy and bad. It's just,
oh, it is based on a mobile game.
Yeah, it's so bad. It's so, oh my god. When people are going to love this, there are going to be people who are making goddamn fan art for this and blowing this. Ugh. Anyway, sorry. Back to Bunny Girl Senpai.
Yeah, but back to Bunny Girl, I've gotten you way
God damn it. I was afraid this, I was hoping this would never enter the air of television. Like, I was hoping I would never have to see this. Alright, anyway. So anyway, my theater experience was with Fate and very respectable theater. People were very quiet the entire time. Although Fate, Heaven's Feel is a movie where it gets kind of darkish at times and you're almost holding your breath because you're afraid that any noise is going to ruin the experience for somebody, because there's a lot of like dulcet tones and kind of subtle noises and stuff, and it's almost a mystery slash a horror film at certain points because there's, or rather there's suspense going on. But similar feeling here. Honestly, no one was talking or saying anything to each other. There wasn't anyone making like their own jokes on the side, which a lot of mainstream people will tend to do. Oh, I will say that when the sound went out for this movie, it was still like going, like the movie was still moving as if Regal hadn't figured it out. The guy next to me was like, "Somebody help! I can't read it." But anyway, it was.
Oh my god!
Good experience.
I love my wife, but she kills me. She comes in here, opens the door, gets a thing, walks out, leaves the door open, and then turns on the hairdryer.
You know it's a power play, right? She's like, "This guy is a nerd fandom. It doesn't matter."
Should I get up?
I'll always love your hopes and dreams, but make your hopes and dreams silent to my hair drying.
Should I get up and close it, or just wait?
Close it, but kind of give her a weird look. Oh, like,
I'll be right back. Jesus. Well, that door doesn't even really block sound. Anyway, let's continue.
Alright, so let's actually dive into the movie now that we both said our experiences, because I think that basically covers it. I was very pleasantly surprised by my experience. No one dressed up at yours, right?
Well, how would you dress up for this? Wearing normal clothes.
That's true. I guess they can get the jackets.
There's only two possible ways you can dress up for this, in my opinion. it's the same way. It's just two different people doing it. You could have a girl show up in a bunny girl outfit, or you could have a guy show up in a bunny girl outfit, ironically.
You could have a guy show up as the giant bunny pink costume. Bunny.
Yeah, the giant bunny. Pink bunny. So it's like, no one wore a bunny girl outfit.
Okay. Alright, that's fine. None of mine either. Alright, so Ian, let's actually talk about the movie, now that we're 22 minutes in, with multiple rants.
And some of which are about completely different anime.
Yeah, completely different. So, anyway. Let's talk about the opening, because what was really nice about this movie is it starts off with no recap. It just starts off right where we left off. By the way, from here on in, spoilers!
Yes.
A lot of them! That one was not a spoiler, because, you know, that one's one of those moments that you can read online, you wipe the sweat from your brow, and you're like, thank God.
Before we get into spoilers, do you just want to give, like, your general, like, would recommend, would not recommend?
So, if you like the show, I would recommend. I'm not going to say strongly. There are parts of this show, or this movie, just get this out of the way. I'm going to be using show and movie almost interchangeably, because that's just going to be too confusing. But there's part of this movie that I think, I'm not sure why they needed to put it in there. There are parts in this movie that I thought were also pretty good. I enjoyed certain aspects of the plot, or at least when, if you were to boil it down, I was like, okay, I really like that they addressed this kind of an area. I thought, but there were certain characters that I thought that they could have showed a little bit more. I wish that other characters had been built up a little bit before this movie. It's a fine movie. It's not perfect. It's not a perfect movie. The show was a lot better. This movie has some flaws, and I think those flaws stem from trying to cram two light novels into one movie. So that's my take.
Yep. I would agree with most of what you said. I would also, if you've seen the, I mean, I can't recommend it to someone who hasn't seen the anime because you just won't, you'll be like for an hour and a half just scratching your head, not understanding anything. So you have to see the anime in order to get anything out of it. But if you have seen the anime, and more importantly, if you enjoyed the anime, like if it was your thing, which it was for me and it was for you, I know, Richard, then yes, I would recommend it. It's if only just because it's really nice to see these characters again and see them interact, because that was the whole highlight to the show, was that we really loved the characters and how they were characterized and their interplay between each other. So I think both of us were rooting pretty hard for Sakuta as best boy, and and he lost out to Midoriya, I believe. And I was like, you know what, Deku, it's impossible for me to be mad at you. So
I guess, but like Deku could win best, should have just won best protagonist and then be done with it, because he's more of a hero protagonist than best boy.
Stay in your lane.
Stay in your lane, goddammit. But, I will say this. So this is no spoilers at all. But if you like Mai, the character Mai in the show, this movie I thought was like her... Like,
she really shined.
Yeah, it was probably the best that she's ever been and more. So that I thought that was, of all the things out of to grab out of this movie, if I were to say the biggest positive, was that character. Mai just went above and beyond any expectations.
She also built upon all of the character that they had, you know, like the foundation they laid for her during the anime, and I think that made it that much more rewarding because she sort of elevated the characters to something that we hadn't seen before. So, yeah, if you liked it, if it was your thing, I think you should see it. I'm going to say it wasn't perfect. I kind of looked through some of the fan reviews on Reddit and stuff, and like a lot of people are gushing over this movie, but I feel like it's a lot of sort of fanboy reaction.
Yeah.
And I think more people are just like, we're very happy to see their favorite characters again, which is fine.
Which is fine, like, and that's actually the strongest part of the movie, was a lot of their favorite characters were there again.
Like an objective point of view, it had some problems, and I came away from it a little disappointed, but I will say that my criticism of it has softened slightly over the last 2 days as I've had time to process, but I still believe that it had some problems. It wasn't perfect, but I'm still glad I saw it.
Yeah, same here. My opinion came out a little bit more in the middle by the end of it, and it really hasn't changed too much. The problem with fanboys is it's hard to have conversations online because people will just, like, gush about their favorite movie, and it's really hard to tell them, hey, this one had, like, I liked it, but there are some problems in this plot structure or something, and then they're like, no, it was perfect. I'm like, okay, I can't talk to you. But anyway, do you want to now jump into the actual
spoilers from here on out?
Yeah, the spoiler stuff. So, all right, you've been warned, and there's no going back now. So, the movie starts off with a flashback, and which I'm not always a big fan of, but like I understand the necessity of it, especially when it comes to the character Shoko, who...
Well, yeah, you better do flashbacks for a character that we didn't connect with super well in the anime.
Yeah, like the only connection we had with Shoko was with Sakuta, because it was not about Shoko's, how Sakuta kind of got over his issues with his sister, having the adolescent syndrome or puberty syndrome. They change it almost constantly, it seems like. She was there to sort of like offer him the words of advice. So the movie starts off with her, a very brief fucking flashback of her in, like, I guess elementary school. And then,
it's her like filling out a work, school project where it's like, talk about the things that you want in the future. And there's like nothing cheap past a certain year. It's pretty much just to establish, hey, she's dying. She has no future. Here you go. Like, this is the problem. Like, okay, well, there it is. Like, we've all seen it in the trailers too, so fine. But
yeah, I don't know if I got dying from that just at that point yet. But
super got dying. Oh, what's that? Like, nothing listed on my future. Like, oh boy, we're in full Nicholas Sparks territory here.
I guess I should have remembered what I was watching because, I'm like, this is a Rascal movie. It's going to probably head that direction. But for some reason, I was sort of like, waiting.
So can I already, like, just before I, like, lose my train of thought, just talk about why I, like, why I was wary initially about a movie centered around Shoko's character?
No, go for it, because I kind of wanted to talk about this, too. I was not, by the way, just before you start, I was not into the idea of more Shoko in general.
So, like, just really briefly, Shoko's character was introduced during the show. Like, it was introduced that there's, like, a young and an old version of her, the old version being the one that Sakuta knew from when he was, like, dealing with the things with his sister. And we don't know, it's not explained during the show why there's a young and an older version, but it's kind of implied that there's something going on with adolescent syndrome there, but we don't know what. Yep. And they never resolve it during the show. So my big problem here is, like, yes, it's kind of set up as this mystery, and, like, okay, fine, from that aspect, like, resolving it in the film makes sense. But the whole strength of the show, throughout the show, was that every one of these girls who Sakuta helps solve their problems with adolescent syndrome is you bond with their characters through the show, through their little mini story arcs based on what happens during the show, like their actions taken in that moment, like with Toga, Futaba, like all of them, like Mai's sister, like, you're in, like, Sakuta gets to know them. He gets to know their problems. He bonds with them, breaks down their barriers, and helps them to solve their problem and thus their adolescent syndrome. Shoko's entire character, most of her bond with Sakuta and most of her positive interaction with the story has already occurred before the series starts. So we're being told that we should care about this character because we're being told that Sakuta cared about this character.
Right.
So that's, for me, that's problem number one. But problem number two is just generally as a character, for me, she is very bland. Whereas, like, Toga, Futaba, all of the other female characters had, like, very distinct personalities, and they were very likable because they made sense, their motivations, their problems, you could relate to them. Like, Shoko's, her only defining character traits are she's nice and she's dying.
Yep.
Like, that's it. There's nothing else. Like, she really does strike me as, like, a Nicholas Sparks kind of character, but blander. Like, where she's just, like, always this, like, peaceful, serene, nice girl who's, like, she's in love with Sakuta because he's nice to her and, like, continues to care for her and eventually gives her his heart, spoiler. But it's like, there's nothing there. Like, there's just nothing there. There's no character development at all for her. Here's a good experiment that somebody performed on me for the Star Wars prequels. And I'm going to perform.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I love this
experiment. I'm going to do this for you now. Yeah. So
I do this for every fake character out there.
Yeah. So, Richard, without describing their clothes, what they look like, or their profession, or their role, role in the story, I want you to describe the following characters as they name them, based only on their character traits.
Okay.
So here's one. I will say Toga. Or Koga. Why did I say Toga? Koga.
Koga. You mean the... Yeah. I don't know what the word is, but, like, that word to describe, like, somebody who cares about gossip or something. Is there a word that describes that? Like, self-conscious. She's self-conscious.
My microphone got pooped on for a second. What did you say?
She's self-conscious. Extremely self-conscious in a way. But earnest, like a follower of justice, I would say, or something. Like, or at least her brand of justice. Because, you know, she kicks the butt. I'm trying to think. Koga's a weird character. I love her so much, but and immature. I would say she's immature as well. She's definitely the youngest of the show for a reason.
So, how would you describe Shoko?
Indecisive.
I didn't even know that I'd say that. She was pretty decisive.
I guess I would say that there is a moment where they could have gone with Shoko, and maybe they do in the light novels, but, like, like the I thought for sure they're gonna do this angle and they didn't, and or they tickled it, but like, so you've got the young Shoko not sure what to write down on her paper in class or whatever, and because she knows she's dying and she doesn't know if she'll even live to see any of these goals fulfilled, and it's really sad, blah blah blah. So she has this like projection of herself as a older Shoko who has fulfilled all these goals that she would like to see. And most of these goals are extremely standard operating procedure for anyone in, not named me, in real life, having fulfilled. And so, where you have now this projection Shoko who is actually looking back in the past of, well, if I hadn't gotten to where I am because of the heart that is given to me, ergo from Sakuta, I really regret not having spent more time with him because I was in love with him. And I wish that they did more of a tug and pull between those two on Shoko, and they didn't.
Well, that would have made more sense based on what they'd established during the anime, because, like, during the anime, the adolescent syndrome presented itself almost exclusively in an unhealthy way.
Yes.
Like, where it was like, oh, it was... The character isn't able to cope with some aspect of their life, so the adolescent syndrome manifests itself in a way that is harmful, and they have to undo it by causing them to confront their grief or confront their trauma or confront like some aspect of themselves that needs to be corrected. But that wasn't the case here. It was actually useful,
yeah.
Because it turned into this like weird time travel plot.
It turned into like a superpower somehow, and I didn't know why they needed that.
Which doesn't make any sense because it's not presented, because like the whole angle that I thought they were going to go down was pretty similar to what you thought. I was like, okay, Shoko's projection of her older self is a way of her not being able to cope with the fact that she's dying,
right?
And so Sakata needs to, and it's going to be extremely difficult for him because he likes Shoko a lot, like that he needs to somehow get her to accept the fact that she's dying in order for her to let go of this projection of her older self that is somehow harming her, which that never is, but like
no.
They have to have done in some way. But anyway, like this is getting ahead of myself because I have another.
I was gonna say, well, how would you describe Shoko then? Describe Futaba, and then go...
Futaba is snarky, sarcastic, wannabe aloof,
yes.
who actually cares a tremendous amount and battles with deep-seated insecurities about herself and her image.
Yes.
But she cares strongly for her friends and very strongly for the people that she's interested in romantically, but she has trouble expressing it because of her insecurities. And like that causes her to sort of have a quiet, placid exterior. But inside, even though she portrays this calm, collected, logical exterior, she actually does have a lot of roiling emotions.
Yeah. Yep. She's very analytical too. So
yeah, exactly. And then Shoko is just, she's a nice girl who's dying.
Yeah, her only fault is honestly, she's dying. Like, she doesn't have a character fault. She has a physical fault. Other than that, she's pretty much perfect.
She's a flatline. That's the thing.
Yeah.
There's just nothing to her. She's like white bread. So the whole thing that made the show so good has already been undermined in the film. And that's a problem. Like, that's a big problem. And, like, what, so...
My biggest issue was, almost immediately, was I got turned off by Shoko because she started forcing herself basically onto Sakuta in, like, a really awkward way. Like, I was not okay with, like basically, Sakuta is making dinner with Mai, and he's sitting on his table, whatever, and Shoko basically shows up, says that she has to live here because, reasons. This plot is so bad with explaining Shoko's situation. Until finally it tells you the whole thing. But, like, at a certain point, she, like, puts her hand on his lap or whatever, and yeah. It was just like...
I was like, oh, this is getting...
I'm like, excuse me, Shoko, you know that they're in a relationship, and, like, what are you doing to Sakuta? And I was just like, get out of here. Like, Mai is one, like, 100% for all the audience members here, and you are about to get, like, punched through the screen.
Well, and that's the big problem, right? Because, like, you're... The whole... crux of this film is that Sakata has to make a choice.
Right.
He has to decide whether or not he wants to let the future pan out as it has already, like as future Shoko has said it will pan out, meaning that he will get hit by a car. He will give Shoko his heart, which, by the way, was like the most predictable plot. Like until they flat out said it, like I was like a good 10 minutes before him, like he's going to die and have to give Shoko his heart. Like,
yeah.
Like this something is where like they're that. Going with this.
Yep.
And then they said, I was like, yep, that's a thing that's happening. So that only works as a plot device if we buy into this conflict, that like if we understand, or not necessarily if we understand, but if we relate to it in the sense that we're like, man, what a terrible position to be. For me, as an audience member who doesn't like Shoko, I'm like, fuck her. Like,
yeah.
People die all the time.
Well, I just kept remembering, like, there's moments where she kept saying, like, where eventually future Shoko wants... Because she really likes Sakata, too. And she wants him to live. She's like, you know, don't worry about me. Trust in modern medicine. And I kept repeating that phrase of like, yeah, just trust in modern medicine. We don't know if Shoko's about to kick the bucket by the time she gets the heart. We just know she's in ICU. Like, it's like a young Shoko, I should say. So, like, the idea that it was a time-sensitive thing that Sakata has to get hit by a car and because Shoko has to get a heart right now does not guarantee the fact that she dies immediately.
More. This makes you not like her even more.
Yeah.
Because, like, her whole thing is that she's just trying to spend time with Sakata because she knows that she's dying.
Right.
And she's like, and she knows that, like, oh, like, I don't want this future to pan out this way, but I'd like to spend some time with him before I go.
She wants to check off the boxes on the list she would have made as a child.
But she does such a shitty... Because she knows that Sakata... Like, she knows his personality and that he's got this complex and that he's going to want to try and save her.
This what complex?
This martyr complex where he's like, he likes being a hero. Like, he does. And... But the problem here is, like, Shoko goes to no lengths to conceal her predicament. Because if she knows, she has to know, or she's dumb, that Sakata is going to try to sacrifice himself to save her once he knows that that's what happens in her future. And if she really doesn't want him to do that because she wants him to live, maybe don't put on a fucking revealing wedding dress where your chest scar is revealed. Like, I figured this out. He figured it out. Like, so it's
she's
either dumb or she's manipulative.
Yeah, I was going to say, can I add two characteristics to Shoko? She is manipulative but indecisive because she wants him to choose her, but she's not sure about it because she doesn't want
that he dies.
Yes, and that's the biggest issue. So she doesn't actually, it's like she wants to sort of like trick him somehow, but she's not sure for what.
And this is and like having Sakta, like, and this is where the movie both the greatest strength and the greatest weakness of, because Mai is the only that acts in a way that is sympathetic towards us, because like she's the only one who's acting in a way that's consistent with the character has been established so far. Like, she's great. She finally breaks down emotionally. She's never done that.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was a great scene.
That was heartbreaking.
Yep. Because...
Like, absolutely heartbreaking.
So, setting it up, like, she basically wants to take Sakata on a train ride to basically as far away as possible, because Shoko reveals... Because Shoko's the worst liar of all times. Shoko reveals when and where Sakata gets hit by a car because it's snowing. And
which makes no fucking sense.
God damn it.
Why she would do that.
There's so much stuff about it.
She could have said, oh man, like, you're gonna...
Wait, there's times...
You're gonna go to Kyoto next week and get killed by a falling rock. Like,
yeah.
No.
And she knows he's got this martyr complex. She knows that this is who he is. Like, it's so infuriating. But, like, Can we also just admit, before I get back to Mai, can we also just say that Shoko is the worst at explaining her situation? Because when she first comes up, she's like, yeah, sometimes I grow up and then I go back down to little kid. And obviously I can't go back home because of it. And we're like, okay, this is a weird...
Which was a lie.
Which is a lie, but like that, I'm like, okay, well, obviously puberty system syndrome, this would be an interesting thing to hear or whatever. And then like, no, that's not it. There's two versions of me. And I was like, okay, well then obviously there's an older version something, and maybe it's connecting back to that child trying to fill out the thing. Nope, it's time travel. Are you kidding me? Like, three times they had to explain the wrong thing to us and eventually finally get to the real one, and it's time travel. And I like time travel as much as the next person, don't get me wrong. But it
really?
Had no
business. I'm getting kind of done with it.
It had no business being here. There was no reason for it to be here.
Time travel. So, like, I tried to approach it the same way that there needed to be some tongue in cheek. Because here's the problem:
yes.
Time travel plots are really hard to do.
Yes,
they're really hard to do correctly. I mean, hell, even Star Trek, one of the smarter TV shows out there, like sometimes had time travel plots that didn't make sense. And in my experience, if you're going to have a time travel plot that isn't in hard sci-fi, if it's in hard sci-fi, the rules need to make sense because that's kind of like what the show or movie is. But if it's in like soft stuff, like, for example, Endgame, Avengers Endgame, that was a really good example of it.
Yes.
Because it was in there and the Hulk is explaining it and he's basically telling the audience, like, look, don't think about it too much. Like this is how it is. This is what it is. Don't think about it. Just enjoy it. It's almost exactly what they were telling them. Kind of like in how they said it in the Austin Powers movie and kind of how they said it in Looper.
Yep.
Where it was just like basically established as like, look, like I loved how Bruce Willis put it in Looper. He basically was like, look, you and I can sit here talking about time travel all afternoon, drawing little graphs and little diagrams until we're blue in the face, like, but none of it matters. And they're like, yep, that's basically him just talking to the audience. None of it freaking matters. So if they had established it to be like that, basically like quickly explained the rules, basically said like, look, it's going to be hard for you to understand. Just go with it. And that's what I tried to do as it was. I'm just going to try to go with it. But they kept changing the rules.
Yeah, because they wouldn't
all
make
the
up.
Time.
It's like I said that I'm like, is this really time travel, or is she just about to dose him and lie to him so that he doesn't go and get hit by a car? Which would have been a better option, I think, at this point. But again, they had changed her story so many times in the movie that I didn't know what was up and down anymore. I didn't know if she was actually a time traveler, or if she was just like kind of like metaphorically saying I'm a time traveler or something. I'm from the future.
Confusing.
It was so unnecessary. But anyway, back to Mai. So Mai, now knowing all this information, all this stuff, wants to take Sakuta as far away as possible so that way he misses that date and lives. And Sakuta, being the stupid martyr that he is, which I also at this point was getting a little tired of his shtick about this, where it was like as if, oh, because it happens in the future, I have to do it kind of a thing. He is like, no, like, we can't, that sounds fun, but I have to do this. And Mai just fucking loses it. Like, complete breakdown of her on the train, because she is absolutely desperate not to let him die. And, man, that was just a great, like, I actually thought that the voice actress was legitimately crying because of how good the performance was at that point.
Yeah, it was definitely a standout moment of the entire film. It made you, like, I mean, Mai, she's already best girl, but bestest girl. Like,
yeah.
She has transcended best girl out of her season, out of the year of her show.
Yeah.
Like, and the problem is, though, it's like, because she's this upset over something that Sakuta has complete control over, is it makes you dislike him, which is a problem, because the whole thing with the show is that you really like him. And the thing is, it kind of, this goes against his character. His character, he's always with these adolescent syndrome. It's like he goes and tells the characters the unpleasant thing.
Yes.
Like, basically, like, if this had been in line with his character, because there's no real reason he should love Shoko. Because, like, the only thing is, like, oh, she comforted him when his sister was going through the shit.
Yeah.
But, like, it wasn't like she did anything. It was one. Wasn't it just the one time at the beach? Like, that was the only time he saw it?
I think the movie implies that they saw each other on the beach like two more times or something. But yeah, it wasn't. So it was weird. A handful, and it wasn't like, stuff. And that was like it was frustrating because no one believed him and his sister and the shit that was going on with his sister and everything. And obviously, very frustrating, especially considering that Kaede loses her memories and all this stuff. But like. Shoko also doesn't really, like, when she shows up, it's very generic of, like, praise for him, or comfort for him. It's nothing specific about, like, I definitely believe you. It's more of, like, well, I'm going to believe you because you need to hear that kind of a thing. And it's, and, like, yes, that's nice, but, like, it's also a little shallow. It's not real. It's, so I'm like, I don't understand, like, how he got as deep of a grateful feeling for Shoko as he does. Like, you could be like, I really appreciate this, but not like above and beyond the call of duty about this. Like, you, I think at a certain point you could check off that he has returned said favor to young Shoko, especially with the kitten and everything. So I don't,
it's just like the ultimate, like, it's the, his actions and his like desire to help her in that way is the ultimate disrespect to Mai.
Yep.
Like in,
and
like
Maya basically says it like multiple times. She's pointed out like how uncomfortable she is about this situation to him.
It's horrendous. Like if I went and I was gonna like jump in front of a car so that you could rip out my still beating heart and put it in the chest of another woman,
yeah,
Susan would shoot me in the heart.
In the heart. Well, then no one gets the heart
because like what is that? It's the thing, like, self-sacrifice is very noble and everything. Like, that's fine. But only in a specific situation, because in this situation, it doesn't come across as noble, it comes across as selfish.
Yes.
And it's just, I don't know. I don't know why they structured it like this. It was a deviation from the structure of how they did these in the show. It made a lot more sense. But I guess they thought it needed to be more cinematic.
Yeah, I wonder because I haven't read the light novels, and now I'm actually kind of curious because I want to see if the light novels pace this better. Oh man, we haven't even gotten to pacing about this movie yet. But like, because there's so much stuff that seems crammed in at certain points that I'm like, you guys needed way more time for this. And then there are other parts that I legitimately thought was the end of an episode. I felt like, at any minute now, we're going to get the credits. Like, this feels
it
like
ended, an end of like, four times!
Yeah! And it wasn't like Lord of the Rings ending, where it's within, like, a five-minute span of each other. This is, like, it felt like there was a potential ending in, like, the first 35 minutes or something. And then it felt like I could have gotten another ending in another spot. Not, like, a true ending, but, like, well, that's the end of the episode. And now we're starting up the next one. Like, almost
very
like a
bizarrely paced.
Like a made-for-TV movie kind of a thing. That was the pacing sometimes it felt like. Yeah, it... There's one time, and it was near the end, and I think it was after all the shit happens, where Sakata's going to the hospital to see Shoko for the last time, and this is back when he thinks that he could do the time travel thing one more time. We'll get to that.
Which, I was like, I was so mad.
We'll get there.
I was so fucking mad.
But, so he, there's no dialogue, and he walks out onto his porch, and there's Mai waiting for him, and then, still no dialogue, they turn, and they start walking. And I'm like, thank God, I did not want anyone to say shit in this scene. I just wanted them to both look at each other, and I wanted them both to start walking, and we all know what's like going on. I was like, this is a nice little moment here. And I was like, and that's why the movie's so fucking weird, because like you'll have these weird, like almost drawn out moments where then it pans to the snow or whatever, and eventually like you'll get a voiceover as they're driving or riding a train to the hospital to see Shoko potentially die or whatever. And then they'll have moments where, like, in the beginning with Shoko forcing him into, like, a date, like, all these date checklist things as fast as possible, like, machine gunning through stuff, and with her opening up so quickly about her secrets and stuff, it's just, like, wow, you guys are, like, all over the map right now with trying to, like, hold moments, but, like, rapid fire through, like, plot points at the same time.
Yeah, it was kind of a mess, like... But it had some really great moments, like the Mai, any scene with Mai in it was just gold. And also any scene with like any of the other characters. Like Koga had some, had some really cute moments.
I was actually pleasantly surprised with moments. Koga.
Like when Futaba was like so happy that he was alive. Like, yeah, that was a sweet moment.
I also love that when he so at a certain point we gotta talk about time travel because it's gonna get there. But when he goes back and he can't interact with anyone specifically for reasons, which again they played fast and loose with. But like he sees like I love the fact that Futaba is writing on her chalkboard scenarios of trying to figure out how to both save Shoko and save Sakuta without anyone dying. I love just seeing her trying to, like, list things about, like, well, how can we make this happen without a paradox? and then, yeah, then when he comes back for real, she's, like, super excited. But, Ian, I think it's... We gotta talk about the time travel. I know it's bad, but, like... So there's another movie that I compare this to. And it's a Kyoto Animation movie that's based on their show, very similar to this whole thing. And it's the show is called The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya, and the movie is called The Disappearance of Haruhi Suzumiya. Extremely similar plot line without heart disease, but basically the main character disappears, which I'm never a fan of removing a character for a long period of time that was central to a show's popularity. But they do, and they use time travel because it is revealed that some... because the whole show is kind of supernatural anyway. That one of the characters kind of does a hard reset of, like, if so-and-so didn't meet when they were kids, then they wouldn't have gone to the school and they wouldn't have met, and now she goes to an all like a fancy rich school instead. And it goes kind of on like down from there, but like basically the main character has to go back in time multiple different ways in order to try to make sure the events that were supposed to happen, and it does a much better job than what this movie does, because one, it had outlined time travel in the show beforehand, even though it didn't really dive into it. Two, the movie did not make time travel the third attempt to explain something. It was the first attempt. So unlike Shoko saying, like, oh, I just grow older randomly, or oh, there are two of me, or oh, I'm from the future, I can time travel. The movie did it much better. And also took place on Christmas, so like the feeling of vibe is the same. So in this movie, I've never seen in the show Sakuta be affected by another person's puberty syndrome or adolescence syndrome, unless it was like the scar thing, well, which had a reason.
Well, with Koga, remember, like he relived the same day because they had quantum entanglement because they had both kicked each other's butts.
Right.
which I thought was amusing.
Yes, and I also do enjoy that they brought that back. I thought that there was a lot of little things. I think overall, this movie got a lot of little things right, but, like, really fucked up some of the bigger things. So he goes back in time, and, like, the rule that they established in the beginning is he needs to find someone who acknowledges him or something. So, as he's back in time, no one knows who he is, no one can
see him.
He can interact with random stuff, but, like, it doesn't really change anything. It's like a ghost, like, he'll pick up a phone, it's like a ghost phone now, but the other real phone's still down there. And so his idea is to dress up in a giant bunny costume, a big pink bunny, and see if there's someone who can recognize him. Basically copy what Mai tried to do in the beginning of the show.
Which was a cute little nod.
Yes, and I appreciated that. And in fact, this entire little sequence, I appreciated everything about it. It's just that, could there have been another way to do this, cause this, other than time travel? But eventually, who was the one to see him? But it's Koga, because they are quantum entangled still. He is super grateful. And then the moment Koga acknowledges him, it's like everyone else can suddenly acknowledge him.
That was kind of a nod, I felt, to episode 3, where he shouts and everything about loving Mai, and that breaks everyone else's spell to where they could all see him, which I felt was kind of a nod to.
Yeah, all right. If that's the case, then I'm a little bit more okay with it, because I was a little confused at how, like, the driver for, I think it was Mai or someone, like, Nadoko, her driver, acknowledged him and said, like, well, you're just going to be part of the crew now. We'll just say you're part of the crew. And then everyone started noticing him in his bunny costume and stuff. So I'm glad, yeah, you're right, that the idea is once you've acknowledged something and brought it to attention to others, it's hard not to notice it anymore. Is a good nod to the third episode in the first season. But anyway, so he's not supposed to see himself or interact with himself, so he somehow finds a way around that by calling him and trying to convince him not to...
Which somehow doesn't cause a paradox.
Yeah, I don't know how that works.
I don't know how does, like, audio communication versus visual...
Yeah.
Not like, I don't fucking get that.
I think it's a spatial thing, but I still don't see how, like... such a message from yourself would have changed something. I do think that this was a missed opportunity here, because, like you said, Sakata had always been about, like, telling these girls what the hard thing to hear. And the one person who needed something hard to hear was Sakata in this. And I would have loved a thing about, like, a little bit more with him trying to tell himself what he needs to hear. And it just never really came across, like, it kind of fumbled it a bit with...
Yeah, because he instantly rejected it.
Yeah, and it wasn't really like a, you need to, like a, you'll reach the same conclusion if I tell you these kind of stuff. It just was like, you need to do this because I said so. And that's not the same way.
I'm from the future, and I know what happened.
Yeah.
I know what's best.
And it's not a good, it was not the same kind of level of conversation quality that Sakata gave to everyone else. So,
well, that's because, like, it's the easiest way to get somebody to do the opposite thing is to tell them to do the opposite thing. Right. Like, especially somebody who's strong-willed. Like that's, it's, you tell someone, all right, you're going to do this, and they're immediately going to, like, it's not, yeah, like you said, like, his interactions with the other characters, like Koga and stuff throughout, were much more meaningful in that they brought to light the hard truth without just saying, like when Koga was in, pretty much confessed her truth. Well, didn't really confess. He had to draw it out.
He drew it out of her, it was like, because he wasn't going to tell her what he thought, because he actually, oh God, this is why the show's so good. Because he actually says earlier, like, it was Kumini who says it to him, his friend. And he says, what if you know that somebody is in love with you? And he goes, and Kumini's like, do I know already that they know? And he goes, maybe. And he goes, well, then I don't really want to say too much, because what business do I have drawing it, like, forcing it out like that? I'd rather have them say it when their heart means it or whatever. And so similarly, Sakata draws it out from... Forces the issue, but does not actually say, like, I know you're in love with me. It's like, stop lying to yourself and say what you need to say. And then she finally is like, I'm in love with you. And, like, and she's, like, crying and all upset because, you know, she knows it's
futile. And then he acknowledges her feelings without, like, he does not reciprocate in any way. He's careful not to, because you don't want to give any... Anytime somebody does something like that, like, it's so easy for them to grasp onto anything as hope that it's reciprocated. He doesn't reciprocate it at all, but he acknowledges her feelings and acknowledges her pain, and then that's what allows her to find closure and move forward.
Yep, because she was never addressing it. So, so similarly, he does not do that with himself.
No,
and it's frustrating.
He's just like, we love Mai, and she'll die if you do.
And she'll be sad, or she'll be sad if you die.
Yeah, so knock it off.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck you, I'm going to do what I want, future me. I'm like, okay, that was productive.
Yeah, good talk, me. So eventually it comes down to this weird trifecta of choice between, basically, if Sakata, like, you have the original timeline, Sakata is accidentally killed when a car slips on the snow while he is waiting for a date with Mai. You have Sakata trying to...
Truck-kun!
Yeah, Truck-kun is the antagonist
Truck-kun
of the show.
Truck-kun, back at it again!
God damn him! So then the alternate thing is now Mai knows about this, and so if Sakata tries to... if he tries to fulfill his the future timeline, Mai will push him out of the way and die herself, which was probably one of the biggest moments of the show, because until it actually happened, I was still kind of like, oh no, they didn't go there, right? It was somebody else. I almost thought it was Futaba or something. I'm like, it's not going to be Mai. And then I'm like, in my head, reviewing like all the stuff that Mai has said, and she's just like, you know, it's possible that I might love you more, right? And after the train scene and stuff, and I was like, God damn it, it's Mai. And then you see Mai's, like, broken body, basically, on the road. And it's just like, fuck!
Yeah, it's pretty, like, everyone in the movie theater gasped. And everyone was sad. And I was just like, fuck you, Sokka, you don't deserve.
Yeah. And they drew out the moment of her being dead for such a long time. And I was like, oh god, is this how the movie ends? Like, is this, like...
Well, no.
Is this,
and like
not, like, ends here, but I was like, are they going to leave her dead? Like, that was my fear.
That was my question, too. I was like, is she going to stay dead? And then, like, as we were moving through the funeral and everything at kind of a breakneck pace, like, they didn't really, like, let it breathe long enough, I felt. I was like, okay, she's not going to stay dead. It's like, I felt pretty...
Did you think...
Just because of the pacing?
Up until the Deus Machina moment, because I cannot describe it other than that. At this point in time, future Shoko disappeared because she said she would on the 24th, saying that after this, that's when she gets the heart and she gets her surgery, so she's not going to be showing up anymore. Did you think that maybe Ryo Futaba was going to come up with a plan to, like, save everything, like a logical plan or something?
No, like, I didn't think so. Like, I didn't think they'd go that route.
I kept thinking that somebody was going to show up, and I thought it would be Futaba the most, but, like, I thought someone was going to show up with it's not over, we can save everyone, I've got this plan, but it's going to be...
But I don't like that. I would have hated that even. Like, and that's why I resented so much Sokka, like, making the comment about, like, maybe we can go back all the way into the past and somehow cure you of a congenital heart defect.
Yeah.
Like, so, I'm like, are you insane? Like, how? Like,
yep, I was trying to think that too.
What is wrong with you?
No, like, one here has healing powers.
But that's the thing, like, it made no sense. And I'm like, and it showed, I'm like, you've learned nothing. Like nothing. Because, like, you don't know what that does to the future. You might not ever. And then, like, Mai goes along. Like, oh, I know our love is strong enough where you would still find me. I'm like, fucking bullshit. Like, he learned nothing. Like, he's willing to jeopardize your entire future on a fucking whim.
So here's where I counter. So, yes, but I would have been fine with that plot over what had just happened. Like, I did not enjoy when...
Yeah, I agree.
If they had done that first...
Yes, that would have been okay because it's, like, the arrogance of love.
Right.
And then, like, and then you could have some, like, sweet moment where they still find each other somehow. Like, they live out the days or whatever.
Or they could rip the Band-Aid off, as the show is prone to do, and say, like, you know, there are some things that you just can't fix. Like, you
that's
just...
That's the whole thing!
And going straight back would have been, like, straight to the matter at the point, and it would have been, like, listen, like... You can't talk a person into being cured of heart disease. Like, it's just not gonna happen. Like, and there's no, other than, again, I kept reminding myself the phrase that I thought was eventually gonna happen, but it kinda did, was, trust in modern medicine. And I'm like, listen, buddy, that's all you can do. Like, you can't. Like, you don't have, you're not a doctor. You don't have an extra heart lying around. You can't kill a guy and take his heart.
Thing, like, I thought that they were fine. I thought that the arc of this story was that Sokka had to accept that there were some things that he couldn't change. And that, like, even he's kind of got this hero complex and he's like, and he's helped a lot of people, but there are some things that he can't change. And, like, I thought that was the arc of the story. But when you do this thing where he suggests this idea that he could go back in time all the way back to when Shoko is a child, somehow cure her of heart disease, and then live out his life and still find Mai, I'm like, you haven't learned anything. Yep. And it doesn't, and he undermines the arc completely. And when Mai agrees to this plan, it completely devalues everything that she said earlier, too.
Oh, no. I think my agreeing with this is less about, like, countering anything. It's more of, at this point, Mai's just using this as a distraction tactic to not have Sakata commit suicide for the umpteenth time again. Oh, and if he's focused on this, then he won't try to jump in another car.
And I don't understand why they suggested this plan, because nothing ever happens with
it. Yeah, like, nothing happens.
Not do it. Yep. Like, they don't do it, but it doesn't matter because the damage is done, because he said that.
Yeah.
I'm like,
this is again where it feels like we're missing a piece from a light novel. Like, as if there was another episode that would have, maybe they would have done that and they found out it's futile or whatnot. But like, the fact that they don't do anything, I would have just cut that suggestion scene out of the movie then, because there was no, like, one, you have no proof that you're able to get time travel without future Shoko forcing you to do it. Like, with plum soda. But if you're not going to do it, then why even bring this up at this point? Like, if it's not an option, if it's not a realistic option, like, don't dangle it as if this is a plot that's about to happen. Like,
because it does more, in my opinion, it did harm. So, like,
if you're going to do... You cut out for a second. It didn't harm.
In my opinion, it harms the characterization.
Like, yeah, yeah.
And so, all right, so kind of drawing this full circle, in my, like, looking back at this, the story's kind of a mess, but then again, like, time travel stories usually are, and I could have looked past it if the central conflict of the story made sense and felt earned.
Yeah.
And it didn't to me, because to me, and this is almost a criticism of the show's success, is that we, as an audience, have such a strong bond with Mai that it's hard to relate to Sakata, because I'm like, you know, people die. People die all the time.
Yep.
Like, we, you know,
Mai says that. Mai literally says that to him, that people die all the time. I think even Sakata reinforces that idea.
Like, we all deal with loss at some point or another. And, you know, I'm sorry, but, like, I'm not going to go and jump in front of a car to give somebody a heart, like, on a whim. Like, that's just not... That's not a thing that happens. Like, if someone tells me that, like, hey, like, so-and-so is dying, I'm going to go jump in a car so that they could have my heart, I would legitimately have concerns that that person is mentally ill.
Yeah.
And it's like, and the thing is, like, this plot only works if he is, it would have made sense if Mai was dying.
Yeah. Yes.
Because it would have made more sense, because the bond is so established and it makes sense to us as the audience. But Shoko is such a weak character and we don't connect with her as well, or at least I didn't.
She's just so underdeveloped. Like, I felt like I was missing background on Shoko that would make me care this much. Like, the only reason I care is by the principle of the fact of a little girl is dying from heart disease. That's always a tragedy. But there's nothing specific about Shoko that changes that, like, that emphasizes it more.
And so when the entire crux of your conflict revolves around the main character's bond between different characters, it doesn't work if he is so much, if we believe and buy into the bonds between him and one character so much more than the other. Like, devalues it. This kind of, you know what this kind of reminds me? It kind of reminds me of every time you have one of those rom-coms where there's a guy and two different girls, and he's with one girl who's not good for him, but then there's the other girl that is good for him, that's like trying to win his heart or whatever, like subtly, or they kind of fall in love, and then he has the turn in the third act where he like doesn't marry the girl that's not good for him and goes to the other. But the thing is, every one of those films, the guy is always like a tool. Like, you always don't like him because he's dumb. Because it's like, wow, how does he not realize that the girl he's with is a piece of shit? Like, how does he not get that? And like, so when you're deep, thoughtful, character-driven anime is starting to mirror tropes in like cheap, popcorn-crunching rom-coms, that's not good.
I do want to say a little applause for not doing cheap tropes in the same cheap tropes from anime, though. But, you know, they're branching out. It's just to popcorn rom-coms.
Like, I can think of half a dozen ways that this would have better done. Like, you just take Shoko out completely. Like, what if it was Kaede? What if it was his sister?
The problem is we just did a Kaede thing. But if this
That's the thing. You've resolved all of the other fucking...
No. If you did, like, Kumini, like, his best friend, like, who hasn't gotten really any showtime but has always been there in the background, this would be interesting. Because now it's your kind of... Your brother from another mother kind of a thing versus your girlfriend. Like, that would be a more compelling thing, especially considering after the Futaba arc, Kumini is a really nice guy who is there for his friend, even though he's not dating her. That would have been a better sort of arc.
You just have to care about, if they had just written Shoko better.
Yeah, because it just feels like we're missing screen time. It feels like there's a scene or two where it just is like, why, like, what about her is so much... Like, so interesting, is the thing. Like, what about her makes her interesting? And there's just not that much there, other than the fact of, like, her connection in the flashback episode, or the flashbacks of Sakuta. But, like, that, you could have had anyone comfort him, and it wouldn't have changed anything. It didn't have to be Shoko. It could have been any character walked up to him and said what needed to be said. There was nothing unique about Shoko, though. So that's what, like, it felt like we missed a... Like, somewhere's
She's
in there.
She's so
somewhere.
Bland. You know what you needed is you needed a character. The problem...
Sorry, you cut out a character what?
You know what you need is, like, a character juxtaposes more strongly with Mai.
Yeah.
Like, you needed, a cinnamon roll character.
Well, we have that. That's Koga.
Well, we needed... I guess that's the thing. Like, that's... Koga is very different from Mai. And so, like, the thing is, having a character so, like... visually, and also not like she's not like Mai, but like visually she is kind of, and also like she's just so serene and so bland that she doesn't juxtapose strongly enough with Mai, where it's like, what is so great about this girl? Like, I don't get it.
Yeah, that's the big thing. So I don't want to go back into time travel, but the thing is, like, So they established that with time travel that you retain memories from, I guess, previous iterations of the things that start to bleed over a little bit. It feels like as if they almost try to pull your name with, like, here's some vague memories of something. It feels like a dream, without ripping off your name, but very close to ripping off your name. And as a result, like, So what ends up happening is, young Shoko, not elementary school, present day Shoko, decides that she's not going to let Sakuta go back and try to do whatever crazy plan he thinks he's able to do. My only guess could have been I don't even know, like, find a donor who's someone dying but has a good heart? I don't know what his plan. He had no plan other than the idea of a plan. And Shoko basically denies him of that and says that she's going to go back and she's going to write down very generic answers or something. She's going to stop this right now. She's going to finish her homework assignment and she's going to write down what she wants to do when she gets older. And I think it's like go to the... this is actually finally the at this point forward, the show is back on track to actually feeling like what... or the movie's back on track to actually feeling like what the show felt like. Where she says, right, like, walk on a beach with my parents or something, or visit the beach with my parents or something, like, run on it or something like that. I forget. I have to see the movie again because the subtitles go too quickly. and so she goes back in time, finishes the homework, everything snaps back to normal, assumingly that Shoko is accepting the fate of death. And so you get this moment where now Sakuta and Mai are walking together and they're talking about, I guess, how they met, because is that what couples do randomly, periodically? They just sort of spontaneously burst out with, like, remember that time when let's review our lives
here. You're glossing over something else. Shoko went back and also, like, not meet Sakuta.
Yes, okay. Oh, man, yeah.
That's a huge fucking plot hole.
Oh, yeah. So, okay.
Because that they dismissed earlier in the film as saying that without Shoko, he never would have met Mai.
Right.
But then, like...
Potentially. I don't know.
Well, I guess they still did, but, like...
So, here's my question. Here's my question, Ian, and this is going to
actually... Having an aneurysm.
This is going to actually hurt Shoko's character even more. How important was her comfort level to him in terms of doing anything. Because other than, like, maybe instilling the idea of saying, you did your best, thank you, and I'm sorry or something, how much veering off of the timeline would that have even done to Sakata? Because he's still, like, other than, the only thing I can think of is that he might not apply to the same school, but I think he was still friends with Kumini beforehand. So would he still have applied to the school regardless? Like, even, although just not hunting for a senpai that, you know, was attractive and comforting. So, like, if he still applies to this school, which clearly he does, the hell's useful about Shoko at this point?
I don't know, because it undermines, like, it undermines that was the worry, her entire, was that... like, meaningfulness to him. Because, like, obviously he turned out fine, Kaede turned out fine, like, he met Mai, so it's like, so yeah, what good were you, Shoko?
Yeah, because if the worry was that if she doesn't show up, then he's not going to look for this girl, and then because he recognizes the school uniform, and he's going to go to this school because he thinks he can find the senpai. And then if he doesn't go to that school, then he doesn't meet Mai, and he doesn't meet Koga, and he doesn't meet
Rie. This is why time travel plots are hard to pull off.
Right,
and
if because you don't it gets messy.
Off, yeah, because like, if you don't pull them off correctly and you don't have rules that are very simple and easy to understand, then you get... that I can deal with plot holes. Some of my favorite films have like big plot holes in it. But the problem is when the logic of the film starts to contradict itself and then compound upon itself, then it starts to break down. And like that's what I felt happened here, where it was like you start contradicting the logic in your own film.
Yep.
And then it's like, well,
things that you said was going to happen suddenly didn't happen, and there wasn't a reason that they didn't happen.
Things that you said were important that don't happen because it defines a character's bond to another. And then it's like, oops, I guess not. Like, oh man, like you're killing me, movie.
Yeah, like I understand these are all high school kids and they're not going to know any of this shit. But like, at least give us a chance to have something that you said be a real worry. And then, like, switch it. Because, like, I don't know all the stuff that Shoko writes on her form. I would have loved to have seen a longer shot of that, but it really fleshes it out. So who knows what she wrote? Maybe she wrote something to make sure that Sakata still meets Mai. But I don't know. All I know is at the end of the movie, they're walking together, and Mai mentions that, like... they go to the New Year. It's New Year's now, and Mai goes to the temple with Sakata. Sakata gets money and donates, like, shit ton because it's all he has left, and Mai throws it in. And you think maybe there'll be something weird with the temple. We don't know, because we're assuming at this point Shoko has died. and Mai passes some poster or something for a movie she did as a child about... someone with a young girl with heart disease.
And
she makes the note, like, she knew she just had to do it, and it really got a lot of people, like, crying and emotional about the whole thing, and says, like, and when Sakata asks her about it or something, she says, like, I don't know, just, it's like your donation to the temple, like, it just felt like something that needed to be done. And, which is, I guess, a clue to the fact that, as a result of said movie, more donations and research went into the... I'm just assuming that more people just signed up as organ donors. That's probably what honestly happened. I don't think that maybe. Research would change
too much. Because I can't think of another reason why she would not die.
Right. Because as they show up to the beach, there's Shoko running around on the beach with her parents, and her parents telling her that she needs to slow down because they still think heart disease is a thing for her. And... then Sakata's there, and for a minute, he's like, no, I don't recognize her. And then, all of a sudden, the memories that bleed over from all the time things, because that's what was the only constant in this movie, bleed over, and he suddenly remembers her, and she sees him, and she's like, super excited because she remembers him, and that's how the movie ends up ending, roll credits with super cool bunny girl ending song.
yeah, that's where we end.
Yeah, I'm fine with, like, there had to be an easier way to get to the part where my being in a movie essentially saves the day. Like, there had to be a more, less convoluted way to do that. Right? Like, oh, I know time travel's confusing, but come on!
Like, I'm just tired. This movie makes me tired. Like, alright, so I feel like we've been shitting on the movie for
I know. I'm so sorry.
But, so, things that I did like, you know, Mai's still great. The other characters are still great. It's really nice to see some of that interplay again. I have serious problems with the core of...
You're talking negative again.
I still would recommend this film to people who enjoyed the show, because it did, like, I still was thinking about it, like, up until we did this podcast. Like, I saw it, like, almost 2 days ago.
I almost went to look for a bootleg copy online to rewatch it again before this. If I had more time, I would have.
I think maybe watching it a second time will be interesting, but, you know, it's worth it if for no other reason than to see the characters again, because I really love them. They're great.
Do you notice that, like, so I really watched the show before watching this movie just to make sure everything was fresh. But, like, I think one of I'll say for lack of a better term, one of the cutest things about the show that it does is when Koga shows up, she has these, like, slips here and there with her old accent, like her bumpkin kind of accent or whatever, and she says her phrase that she accidentally lets go a lot is, "I don't flipping get it." And and Sakata adopts that phrase into his vernacular as he goes along. Like, he didn't have that beforehand, but he starts saying that, and he actually starts having more of her, like... because you would do this with friends. Like, you would adopt, like, her...
To imagine that was an intentional choice.
Oh, yeah, but I love it. And they do it again here, where he actually says, like, "I don't flip and get it." And I'm like, oh, man, I love the fact that you keep, like, at this point, it's a set in stone. Like, her phrase is now, like, what started as a mocking phrase, something he earnestly says now. And I thought that was a very nice little detail and touch. Yeah. So, sorry, I had to say that. It's in the movie, too.
I think, just at the end of the day, there were problems, for sure. It was not perfect, for sure. As most, I find that, like, a lot of anime films based on... I would say the one thing I really appreciated that there was a recap. I really appreciated...
That there was a what?
That there was no recap.
Yes,
heading in.
God, yes.
It was a film that... embraced canon, so one of the problems I had with the My Hero Academia movie was, because I watched that a couple months ago on my phone, and
I still need to watch it. There were some actual people, while the movie was, like, waiting to be started, there were some people talking about that, because I obviously, you're in an anime movie, so you talk about other anime movies, but
yeah, it was a fine movie, but the thing is, and that a lot of these shonen movies, particularly Dragon Ball was, like, famous for this, is they don't fucking matter in the greater context of the story. Like, they don't. They have no impact because these shows, they want to exist on their own. They want to do the movies to make money, but they don't want people to feel like the movies will inform the show. Because there are plenty of people that won't watch the movies.
Well, because they don't make it accessible. So, like, the show is airing on this channel, but they don't have the airing rights for the movie, right. So they don't want to make the movie feel like it has to be part of the canon.
Right, undermines the film. Every Dragon Ball movie is like that. The My Hero Academia movie was like that to an extent. The thing is, like, it introduced, like, this, like, glove thing that... Deku wore that where he could punch at 100% power.
Oh, cool.
And I was like, well, that's getting destroyed before the end of the film because you never see it again.
Right, right.
And it's like, lo and behold, it's destroyed by the end of the film. And it's like, that's the thing. Like, it was a fine story. It was cute and everything. Nice to see the characters interact and stuff, but, like, it had no greater bearing on the entire, like, the story arc. But this one was 100% a conclusion to the story that we had already seen.
Yep.
So it was like that. I really appreciated that they didn't shy away from that. That they were like, hey, this is going to be the conclusion of the story. It's important. Like, you need to see it. So it made it feel like more weighty. And I hope that they do that with the Demon Slayer movie. I kind of feel like they're gonna, like, that's the impression I've gotten, but we'll see.
Yeah. So, with having seen now Heaven's Feel, and now Bunny Girl Senpai, where Heaven Feel similarly, Fate can get away with it because of the fact that there's multiple lines based on what the player's choice was in the graphic or the visual novel. So you'll have a more emphasis on Saber if you choose to go down the Fate route. You'll have more emphasis on Rin if you choose to go start kind of doing more Rin things and doing more on the Unlimited Blade Works route, or if you like Sakura, if you do more fucked up things and tell her that you think she's a tramp, then you'll go down the Heaven's Feel route in no uncertain terms. But when the movie comes out, my issue is a lot of stuff still stays the same, and the movie feels at times a little rushed, a little like there's because you have to cram a lot into a movie. And I know, Heaven's Feel, The Precious Flower, that's part one. But it does move through a lot of spots that really quickly. It's hard to say, you can watch this movie stand alone. You almost need to watch the show, because it goes through so much so quickly that I think in a vacuum it would have not functioned very well on its own. And now with this movie, with Rascal Does Not Dream of a Dreaming Girl, it very clearly has parts of the light novel that probably needed to be there, and I really wish that this was the season 2 and not a movie, because we would have gotten maybe more stuff with Koga and Futaba than as almost just extra feel to them. They're there and they get some good cute moments, and Koga kind of comes in at the clutch at the end as a solution for certain things, but they're just not in here that much. I mean, Kaede's almost not in here at all, with how little she pops in screen time. I think the only time that there was a good Kaede moment was at the very beginning, when Shoko is very much making super advances on Sakata, and Kaede's like, well, you two have fun, and then closes the door and shuts herself in the room. It's like, oh god. I am worried for the Demon Slayer movie because of the fact, what if they just... Demon Slayer, the show, was so good because, it took its time in a lot of areas. It skipped over montage scenes mercifully, but, it didn't try to fast forward through characters too much. I mean, don't get me wrong, I really wish Zappy Boy was a little bit fast forward, but, I do worry of, are they gonna do something similar? And it makes me just feel when I see, oh, we're making a movie, I'm like, ah. Couldn't you just done the same thing you just did? Because that was really good, and I don't want you to rush the story. I want you to take your time again. Because I liked what you did the first time. So that's where I feel right now with it. So how do you feel about with the Demon Slayer movie coming up to kind of copy?
I mean, Ufotable has a pretty good track record when it comes to their content.
That is true. It's a different studio, and they do have more movies under their belt.
I would say that this is just impressions, because we haven't gotten... But this sounds like the movie is based off of an arc from the core content. So that's encouraging, because one of the big problems with the Dragon Ball movies was that most of those movies were not canon. They were not stories written or drawn by Akira Toriyama.
Yeah.
So... they were essentially filler. So, but the fact that the Demon Slayer movie is going to be coming from canon should be encouraging. So I'm generally optimistic, I would say. It has the perfect storm for something that could be really good, because it's a good studio. It's canon. The movie will be canon, as far as I understand. The train arc, I guess, is a canon arc in the manga. So that's what I have heard. So I'm encouraged. I'm not as super skeptical, but we'll see. I've been wrong before.
Yeah, I mean, they have their Heaven's Feels movies, which aren't terrible. They just... God, the first one just feels a little rushed and a little all over the place sometimes.
But I blame that more on the fact that the Fate franchise is an absolute fucking mess.
Yes, it is.
So, I don't know how much of that is the studio's fault.
Yeah, it's... I'm not going to go in my Fate rant again. But yeah, it does get difficult to explain a linear story with an arced with a three-art split of a story.
You know what it kind of reminds me of? Is it kind of reminds me of the before, of course, it got bought out by Disney, the X-Men cinematic universe. Like, if you've ever tried to break that shit down and how all that connects, like, it's a nightmare because it doesn't make any sense. So
yeah, God, yeah, the X-Men is another weird one. Who's got X genes now, and who's whatever. So I think that's everything I've got that I wanted to talk about. But yeah. Like, man, yeah, I had to go onto the Discord for Shun Butayaro, I think is how you pronounce the Japanese name for this, for the rascal does not dream of Bunny Girl Senpai, just to figure out to explain the ending, because I didn't understand. The movie is so subtle about it, almost too subtle. It's fine to explain some things here and there in movies. You don't have to, like, slap us in the face, but, like, you know, push. It's fine to push your thumb a little bit harder. But to explain why Shoko was alive.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
Ba-dooch.
Ba-da-boom. But yeah, so luckily I was not the only one diving into, like, it was almost like everyone all at once just got up from the movie theater, went to the Discord channel, and be like, what the fuck just happened? Yeah. And the mods immediately pinned one of the, like, because they've all read the light novels, luckily, but they, which I guess is explained better. Now I really want to read light novel 6 and 7 to find out if it's explained better. But, like, they pinned immediately the explanation of, like, my getting a movie and the donations and organ donations and research for it, and Shoko ended up getting her organ donated. But yeah, because the plot. So here, I'll do my positive stuff about the movie as well. Because we keep getting off track a little bit, but yeah, while the plot, once the time travel hits and the Deus Machina comes in, where Shoko just appears. Again, even though she was established as gone, like older Shoko appears. Ignoring that, it's still a good little ride. Like, Sakuta is still overall being still Sakuta. Where I think up until the Deus Machina, it felt like I was waiting for Sakuta, like as if he was kind of waiting to see if there's a solution somewhere around in here. Like, I'm gonna, like, maybe if we hang out, she'll return back to normal and check off all of her lists, but then finds out about the heart thing and about him, and then maybe if something will show itself. And nothing never really does until the ending, and again, if they had just done that, it would have all changed. Like, if him and Mai had gone back in time, to when young Shoko was writing the thing, if they had just done that as a plot, you could have worked with something with that. I thought that Koga was for the small parts in there. I really appreciate just how much of a friend she's growing into with Sakuta. For the short bits, like, we see her mostly just at work now. But every once in a while, she'll, like, pat him on the back as she's running by with her new friend, Entourage. When they meet in the train station, he's, like, desperate and she's the only one who can see him. It's cool little, like, friendship that's growing off from where that arc left off. I wish there was more Kamini. I think that whenever he does something, because Futaba is still obviously in love with him, I would have loved to have seen just more poking a little bit more with that, but obviously it's not a focus, so you can't force that in. Mai is definitely the one who stole the show the entire way through.
Yeah, for sure.
I wish I had stuff nice to say about Shoko, but, like, she immediately rubbed me off the wrong way by, like, hitting on...
She rubbed you off.
You know... No.
Good job, Richard.
The college one!
Oh, my God.
Going to this movie, I really was, like, curious about her mystery, and I thought it was... Knowing the show, I was eager to be like, okay, well, this is going to be more Shoko. Maybe they'll make me like her and sympathize with her. And then immediately threw that all away by having her... Like, without any kind of a, no shame at all, she just shamelessly like, put the moves on Sakata in front of Mai. And I was like, all right, bitch, gotta go. Get.
Yeah. She didn't make a very strong first impression there.
No.
Oh,
she's
shit.
Like, well, I'll need to stay here for a while. And he's like, how long? He goes, hopefully forever. I was like, okay, you're pushing this. Mai is like
you're,
right
you're
there.
You're playing out of your league here.
Yeah, and then, like, she comes in, and she's just like, I'm rather fond of Sakata, too. Puts hand on crotch, and we're like, okay, you need to leave now, because Mai will, like, when Mai enters the door, she's got the knife.
That was hilarious.
At first, like, it just seemed, like, so obvious, like, she had forgotten she had let go of it, but then as it got closer, it was just like, oh, no, she's tightening her grip on it now. She's like, she's out for blood. So... yeah, little moments like that I enjoyed, but then also, like, it just obviously did not make Shoko a character that I was going to root for. And so when you find out, like, I think I liked young Shoko more than old Shoko, because young Shoko had been not alienating me, but at the same time, it was just the idea of the Shoko of, like, oh, like, you know, cute little girls dying from heart disease, that's a really sad thing. Is there anything we can do about it? No, I'm not a doctor, and I don't have a spare heart lying around. All right, well, I'm really sorry, Shoko. This was fun, but I wish I just don't have that power. I'm not a superhero. This is not a superhero show. So,
I guess then we wouldn't have had a movie.
Yeah, really. Man, that's how that ended. Like, roll credits.
Sorry about it.
Yep. But no, I. Man, it's hard to say good things without saying the negative things. And that's kind of where I'm at with this movie, where I'm like, it's really good, but this happens. And I'm like, but that's really... and I know this was really bad, but there was also this really nice thing that the movie did well, too. And, like, the music was still just as good. And, like, the voice acting was still, like... even with Shoko, like, I still enjoyed the voice acting, even though it's all in Japanese. But, like, it... like, you could feel the emotions from people the show. In fact, I think at this point, if I close my eyes, I could probably tell who Koga is based on how distinct her way of talking is compared to the others. I could definitely tell, I think, Mai at this point, because you'll hear that voice off screen. And when I first started watching sub anime, I probably would have to see the person to know what voice matched up with where. But now, I think either I've gotten better or this show is just distinct enough with its characters that I'm going to know who is who based on how well that they've adapted their character to themselves. And the movie still does that really strongly as well. So, yeah, those are some of my trying to spin this in a positive way. Like, it should be watched if you enjoyed the show. Just know that there are going to be qualms to be had.
Yeah, the plotting gets a little messy. To its detriment, yeah. But it's still definitely something that I would recommend fans of the show.
Yeah, and I think ultimately it's probably gonna somewhere down the line I'm gonna just be like, you know, that movie was whack, yo. I'm gonna go and buy the two light novels and see if the story is actually better, or if it's just the story itself that's whack. Like, is it the movie's fumbling with this time travel plot and two light novels cramming into each other, or was it from the beginning a messy plot? I could see it being both. I could see it being one or the other.
Right. Cool.
Cool deal, mm-hmm. Man. Well. Yeah. All right. Got anything else? This is the end, I guess.
Nope. Looking forward to fall season. Hopefully there's some good stuff. It's just about to get started. I'll probably use this time to watch one or two anime that have been sitting on my shelf that need to be my proverbial shelf that have been recommended by other people, and sort of let the fall season get rolling before I get into it. I usually like to like wait for like week two or week three to be in the books so that I have like some content to get through. So
yeah, same here. I like to if I'm going to binge,
then people can tell me what's good.
Yes, that too. Plus, like, it's almost like you wait until Gigot releases his in season in a nutshell video, and then you're like, "Oh, that looks pretty good. Yeah, let's try that one." But I might do the same thing I did for the summer, where like I wait like 6 or 7 weeks, and then you're like, Richard, you need to animate better. I'm like, oh, you're right. And then all of a sudden, within a week, binge everything. And suddenly realize, like, oh, this is a really good season. Holy crap. So maybe I'll do that again as I take a small reprieve. I kind of want to watch. I still haven't watched the second Heaven's Fate movie, so I kind of want to see if I can find a stream of that or somewheres, or see if it's anywhere airing. And man, we still haven't gotten Weathering with You, and I hope that's not on the Crunchyroll Awards, because I'll be very disappointed if, like, when I get to the movie section and they show, like, here's six movies that no one has seen. I'm like, I don't know what to vote for here. What do? I didn't watch these. Like, what the hell? So, I hope Weathering With You is not on that list, because it's not U.S. release, and there would have been no way for me to have found this. I purchased the Blu-ray of Megalobox. It's it's super nice. It comes with its like art book thing. I think the only disappointment I have with it, the only one, is it didn't come with the soundtrack. That would have been awesome. But
yeah, that would have been nice.
But it does up the quality to 1080p. So I'm curious to see how that looks. But I hope it. I didn't check to see, because I only literally just got it the other day. But I hope it also has a way to, like, down it back to 480, because that was, like, the intent was to have it in, like, the pre-HD right. days, too. So
To be a retro throwback to, like, 90s anime.
Yeah, so I hope that it has a toggle between the two, where you can, like, watch it in 1080 if you want, or you can watch it in 480.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, so I'll have to check it out and report back, but I'm excited. I did not expect to own that, but it was so cheap. It was
really good.
On Amazon, that I just couldn't say no.
Oh, I read a thing on Reddit that said that the Blu-ray for Fire Force has only sold like 108.
Wow,
that is an anime that has fallen out of the good graces.
Oh, I'm well aware. So Fire Force itself, I don't want to talk too much on this because this is near the end. We're wrapping up, but like Fire Force is a weird show because it took two breaks. One because of the fire. And which was good, like that was a good move, I thought, like because of the Kyoto Animation fire. If your anime deals directly with things being set on fire, I think it's a good idea to take a break as show of respect for the victims. And then all of a sudden it took another break, and I don't know what that break was for, but it took another week off. And yeah, it's so. And Fire Force, I'm not as down on it as you are. I don't think it's shonen trash as some of the other shonen trash movies are or shows, but like it definitely goes off the rails at certain, like I've said it before in the last one, where it doesn't hold the sentimentality that it should have held. I still enjoy it as like a show, sort of like a, you know, like a dessert, a cheap dessert, like a bag of pre-pop popcorn. it's fine. I know I could do better, but like it was also on sale and it was easy to grab, so I just ate it. but it's not like as unhealthy as say like me diving off and grabbing like the most greasiest chips I could find either.
Right.
So yeah, I didn't even know the Blu-ray was out, because isn't the show still airing?
That's what I thought, but I guess what I don't know. Reddit never lies, right?
Yeah, right. Well, you know what they could do is maybe they're doing like this is super old school, but like here's the first four episodes on Blu-ray, and it's like now give us $27 or $40 or something ridiculous like that, because you know you can't get this anywhere else. As opposed to like what I just got, which was 12 or 13 episodes of Megalobox Blu-ray for $30. Which is extremely reasonably priced and how it should be priced. Anyway, all right, Ian, do you want to wrap down?
I'm glad that we both got to see this in America. And
yeah,
you know, that's 10 years ago, this would not have been shown.
Yeah, really. Are you definitely going to see the Demon Slayer movie whenever it comes out?
Oh yeah, I think I will definitely carve out time to see that.
Same here. Let's do the same thing again, and then also compare the audiences, because I have to think Demon Slayer is going to have a very different audience compared to.
Yeah, Rascal. I feel like there's going to be some shonen fuckboy trash there. So
yeah, can't wait. Okay, cool. Then that will be fun. I think also the Konosuba movie is coming out rather soonish. I gotta look up that and see if there's still tickets available, because that's something I would be interested in seeing. But that will be for another day. So anyway, let's close this down. So if anyone has any questions, qualms, if you have criticisms about our criticism, and you are able to articulate it in a way that is not saying, I think that this movie is perfect and you guys are dumb, then please write us in to leaguemediocregentlemen@otnmedia.org. We also have a Twitter. It's @TheLOMGPodcast. There is a Discord link in the description below that will include a link and a place where you can go and hang out with all the OTN staff and other fans of their products and stuff. A lot of esports stuff, so you can play some, get some teams up for League or Dota or Apex Legends or what have you. You know, I'm pretty sure there is something there for almost everyone, although I don't think there's any Civilization or Divinity people yet, so maybe I gotta... That would be interesting if I were to do something like that, get a channel started. There's Twitch streams every Tuesday and Thursday at 8 p.m. Although I'm still on hiatus from Twitch because I'm just trying to grab more time for myself to do things. So for now, it's just Thursday at 8 p.m. That was with John. At Monday, I believe at 8 as well, there is John and Joey's Level Up podcast on Twitch. So if you wanted to jump into the conversation for that, you are more than welcome to kind of join them as they stream their podcast, which to me sounds like a terrible idea, but they do it well, so by all means, go and see that. But yeah, Ian, thank you so much for jumping in and sort of helping me shit and praise the Rascal Does Not Dream of a Dreaming Girl movie.
No, thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun. We can meet at the end of the season and see what fall has in store.
Oh yeah, and then we'll have to talk about, I guess, everything of the year or Crunchyroll, or we'll combine the two so that way we don't do three of the same episodes again.
Yeah, it's going to be nuts.
Yeah. Oh man. All right. So cool.
Strap yourselves in, people. It's going to be a long one.
Oh man. Yeah. It might be a two-parter. It might be a two-parter. But all right. Cool. All right, guys. Then thank you everyone for listening and tuning in. And have a mediocre rest of your day and weekend.